Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Dr. Laura Stevenson, Associate Dean and Director of the Cooperative Extension Service for the University of Kentucky. Our weekly topic will be, what is extension, and how did extension respond to the recent natural disasters across our state? As always, we will wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy our show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
How's Vicki this morning?
I'm doing well this morning. It's a nice, brisk morning this morning, but it's going to be a pretty day.
My kind of weather.
Me too.
Enjoying being on the road, but even more so after being gone almost a week now, I'm going to enjoy going home today.
Absolutely. Getting back into the central time zone is going to be a big help for my internal clock for sure.
Just being able to watch the evening news at 10 o'clock at night is, if I ever make it that long, to say I ever make it that late.
Usually
gone long before then, but that will be a nice thing. I grew up in the eastern time zone. I enjoy coming back and visiting. I enjoy leaving and going home.
There's really no place like home.
Absolutely.
There's no place like home.
But, you know, home's where you hang your hat, and I've had the good fortune to hang my hat a lot of different places, and right now it's a pretty good place. I enjoy where I'm at.
So. Sure.
We have been on the road for about a week now. We've been recording in Lexington, doing a lot of different things with a lot of folks that we don't get to spend a lot of time with, a lot of different specialists, and that's been a pretty good lead-in or culmination, if you will, to our guest today. We have the good fortune. It's probably one of the things, before I introduce her, it's probably one of the things that I've been most proud of throughout my career, and that's our access and availability to our administration.
Absolutely.
That's right.
KACAA, we get to sit down a couple of times a year with our administrators and voice concerns and at the same time find solutions to things that we want to work on for across the state. And today's just a perfect example of that. We have Dr. Laura Stevenson with us, and she's going to sit down and talk to us a little bit about a few different things. But first, Dr. Stevenson, welcome.
It's great to be with you all.
Good, good. For those of you that may not know Dr. Stevenson, we're going to let her tell just a little bit about herself and maybe the path that she's taken to get to where she's at.
Well, I'm definitely Kentucky born and raised, and as a result of that, have a lot of ties to Kentucky agriculture through our family through the years, and really had an opportunity to have a commitment through extension myself as a 4-H'er, and then working on extension council and being a volunteer. I had the opportunity to be an intern when I was in college, and then there was a hard freeze on extension jobs. There was no opportunity at that point for that career to take off. So I was a teacher at Monticello High School for 5 years. And then the freeze thawed, and I had the opportunity to become an extension agent in Clark County. Was there for 18 years and then became a district director. Then from that point, was fortunate to go on campus and become an assistant director for field programs for Family and Consumer Sciences. After that, took a little time out of Kentucky and went to the University of Tennessee.
We won't hold that against you.
Yeah, I hear that. And, you know, I did take on the orange color for 5 years and then came back and now am in this role, and I gave all my orange away. But I never gave my blue away, just so you know.
There you go.
I'm sure the orange looked as bad on you as it does everybody else that works.
You've got to wear gray or white or black with it.
Yeah.
We can joke because at the time we're actually recording this, we're leading into the University of Kentucky, University of Tennessee football game in the fall of 2022, and that's a storied rivalry, to say the least.
Yes,
and
it is.
Looking forward to seeing what comes out of it, but go ahead.
Well, and that's my career path, to be able to come here and come back, I think, to enjoy working with and across the state.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, it's, you know, listening to your extension story, you know, it's as a director, you've been at every level, you know, and I think that is what what makes you a good administrator is because you do know what it's like to be an agent. You were an agent for several years, and you know what, you know, your family farmed, and so you understand farming, and you lived farming, and then being able to just to keep going up that ladder, so to speak. But having that story is good, because you know, a lot, we say we're a family, and a lot of folks get introduced to extension because of a family member.
You know, we say this almost every show. We stumble across an idea mid-show on what another show should be. And David, she's talking about her extension story. I see that as a chance for us to sit down with volunteers at some point and say, what's your extension story?
Absolutely.
And make some recordings like that just for promotion purposes, and to hear in their own words what extension means to some of our clientele.
And there's a lot of extension stories.
Yeah, and I think it's great that you were a volunteer too, because you know what the volunteers of today are facing, and some of the struggles, and you and I know that we have very passionate volunteers. So you know, it's great that you were a volunteer at one time and have come right up through that. So that's a great story.
Well, when you think about what extension means and why it was founded, it was meant to be a locally based opportunity for our stakeholders across the state to learn the research information from the university. So you're right, being able to see and be involved at different points in extension has been critical. You know, I watch other states and some of the decisions they have made, and so glad that Kentucky has stayed really firm about, we are volunteer based, we value our local agents and staff, and we want to make sure that we have that capacity in place, and then we value and ensure that we have the faculty at the state level. And when we look across the nation, because of budget and other reasons, one or more of those have been taken out of the equation. Mm-hmm. And when you lose that, you lose the strength. It's like the three-legged stool. Mm-hmm. So Kentucky stayed firm, and I'm hoping that we stay committed to that. And we've had investments from our legislators and our local governments to make sure that we can continue that.
Certainly. So, you know, throughout my career, I've asked that rhetorical question as other extension services have receded, backed off, slowed down, however you want to put it, scaled back, and Kentucky continued to grow. And I always asked myself that question, knowing the answer, what was our silver bullet? What was our magic bullet that helped us do that? And it's always gone back to the local support. And not just the local financial support, but the local support of our leaders who kept pushing, kept demanding that we meet those needs and that we're a part of the conversation in the communities. To me, that has been what has made Kentucky Extension different from any other state.
Well, and we are so community driven. We are a community partner. That, I mean, you know, that's kind of a buzzword, I guess you could say, when Extension people start talking, you know, it's, you know, being a community partner. But you know, when you go we have an office in every county, and when you go in those counties, you know, most people know who the Extension folks are. I mean, because we are a community partner, and we wear a lot of hats. I mean, the people in our counties know that we wear a lot of hats, and we may be doing multiple things in a 8 or 10 hour stretch there. We may be working on several different things, but I think that what makes us strong, though, is that we are a community partner. We are partnering with those folks in our counties because we want to help improve the lives of the people we serve. That's what we do. That's what everything we do is about. And so, you know, that community part is what keeps us going, too. I agree 100%.
Dr. Stevenson, talk with us a little bit about the importance that administration and, you know, the folks at UK, you know, how they value the importance of that community involvement in each of those counties.
I think often I'm in meetings with Dean Cox and others, and they talk about the fact that we center on needs assessment first, and we do that on a regular basis in those counties, asking people, you know, what do you think's important, looking at statistics and data and making sure that we're staying on target. We have our faculty who are looking at state trends and making sure that our agents have the background to answer the questions that are coming, to be proactive, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. So, and it's always about serving that local need. I mean, when we talk about the things that we've dealt with this year, whether it's been the disasters, whether or we've had the avian flu come, we've got a tick issue at this point that we're talking about now. We're trying to be proactive, but it's all to benefit those local producers, those local stakeholders, and to make sure that you all as agents have the information you need. Because, like you said, Vicki, you're in the community. You're in, when you're at church, they ask you questions. When you're in the grocery store, they ask you questions. You know, when you're at a ball game, they're asking questions. So we want to make sure that we're providing that for you. And our University of Kentucky administration truly values and supports that. And they try to show that through information they give out. This just recently, Dr. Capilouto had a story about our response to the floods in eastern Kentucky, and he did a lot of research about where we were 100 years ago when we first started and how we have continued to make sure that we're local. And that was the crux of what he sent out. So it shows he understands it at the top level and values it.
That's good, because sometimes, you know, we've all heard this statement. Extension is a best-kept secret. We've all heard that. You know, we've probably all said it, to be honest. But we really don't want to be – we don't want to be kept a secret. But me personally, when somebody will ask, especially if you're doing like a career day or something like that, and the students will come up to me and they'll say, well, what does an ag agent do? And you sit there for a minute and go, well, let me see how I put this in words. You know, because
it's easier to name the stuff we don't do.
It is, you know, because it is. Extension's kind of like that. I think it is hard to put into words what we do because, one, it's ever changing. You know, a lot of it is ever changing. A lot of things pop up, you know, that you're not expecting, like you had just said, Dr. Stevenson. But then you've got just a lot of things going on at the office. You've got, just like the three of us, have got programs that we do jointly. We have stuff we're working on individually, and then with our coworkers in the county. And it is hard to put into words what we do. But at the same time, it's very rewarding what we do.
Yeah, and it's ever-changing. That's the other thing, that you've got to be able to roll with the punches, because it's every year's not the same. And, you know, we have new obstacles. This last year has been one of those that we've had lots of things to overcome in the last, you know, 12, 18 months. And you've got to be able – you kind of got to be a little flexible. Some of us are not very flexible, and I'll be the first to admit that. But you try to roll with the punches best you can.
Well, you know, to underscore that, we talk about the importance of our leadership in our community and being involved with that leadership. And above and beyond that, being fully engaged with our leadership, with our community members, is what helps Extension keep their thumb on the pulse of what's going on. If we didn't have that relationship, it may be hard for a newcomer into a community, maybe that wasn't their home, to get plugged in and to become a part. But so many of our community members have had that relationship with Extension in the past. They're so willing to relay that to that new person coming in. And if they want to be, they can be in any part of a community and affect it, you know, any part of that community that they want to.
And you, the relationship, that's, you said that perfectly, because, you know, we are in the, what makes us successful is that relationships that we're building with our clientele, with our leadership, with other agents. I think that's kind of what we're in the business, because if for you to have a seat at the table, you know, it's because somebody, you've built a relationship with somebody and they trust your input and they want to hear what you have to say. And
I think that's what Dr. Stevenson and them depend on us as agents to do in the county, is to be involved in that conversation and, to help get the information back to them that they need to help us get the resources to help people in our community.
We're the conduit between the university and the community.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. That is something that has not changed ever, as far as I'm concerned, since Extension has been in existence. That's kind of our role in Extension. Now, Extension has had to change and evolve and all that kind of stuff. But, from that standpoint, we are that voice for the university in that county.
Mm-hmm. And we don't, like you said, we don't always know what's coming down the pike. And I will say, we have all, thankfully, we are on the other side, or getting there if we're not there, on the other side of COVID. But none of us saw COVID coming. And that's just an example, though, of we all had things planned throughout 2020. I mean, way into the fall and winter, but come, late February, early March, that halted. And the way we did business had to change. And so we all had to change, just like not just us, the rest of the world had to. But in a lot of instances, though, Extension was looked at and called upon about how do we do this,
I think if we all would have said in March, there was no way that we could flip a switch and just change the way we did things so quickly. And everyone did, from an Extension perspective. And what I hear from people in the communities is that Extension was one of the few that stayed hardwired in to the community. Mm-hmm. It was not just doing like podcasts and Zooms and things like that. It was having doors open, mm-hmm. with doors closed, if that makes sense.
Because that's a good way of saying that.
We were figuring out how do we reach people, but still making sure that our people were safe and others were safe, and all the different ways were really, really interesting. How Extension agents made sure that they had farm visits across the truck, or they had soil samples that were. Even we had drive-in windows, not just outside boxes, but drive-in windows that were built. So we worked hard, and it was the local staff that made sure that we were successful and continued to meet the needs, just differently.
I saw that in the county that I was in at the time with the agents that I worked with. They all took a creative approach into how they did things. Some, you had to hold them back. They didn't want to do things that way. We were all used to doing things in person and face to face, and it just wasn't possible at the time. Mm-hmm. But that's a good problem to have, people wanting to be engaged.
And that's just an example of, like you said, David, how we have to roll with the punches. And
I'm not very good at that, but yes, I agree.
Well, you're getting better.
I think you're better at that than you give yourself credit for. We've all rolled a little bit over time.
You can't be an Extension agent and not roll with the punches,
true.
Buddy.
Yep.
I've said that before. Some of the most organized, put together, I's dotted, T's crossed people that I knew sometimes had a hard time in Extension because they may have been super organized, but the world they were trying to operate in was not.
Yeah, it's just like herding cats sometimes.
That's exactly
it's not
right.
Possible.
And on the same hand, I've known tremendous, just super agents who flew by the seat of their pants, just from one program to the next. You wouldn't have thought they remembered to take their car keys with them sometimes, but they were so loved in their community because they were into everything. Nothing went by that they weren't a part of.
Yeah, I grew up in Extension, so I remember the days my dad was on the telephone at, 8 o'clock at night talking to farmers and that kind of thing, and that's kind of changed a little bit, but you still get, I get calls on the weekend, so you take those calls and just kind of roll with it, and I mean, it's just, It's just normal now. I mean, I don't pay any attention to it at
all. I don't
either. So
that's part of how we evolve in meeting our clientele's needs. Yeah. We all, you know, early in my career, I took those calls at 8 o'clock at night on the landline.
Yeah, you didn't have a cell phone.
That's right.
Then I got to where I took them on my cell phone. Now we just text.
I was going to say. Text has made it a little bit easier, though, sometimes.
And honestly, the way we communicate, Dr. Stevenson, and you can probably comment on this a little bit, you know, we've got different generations of folks that like to be contacted. They like their information a different way. You know, maybe talk a little bit about how some of those, what are some of those ways and the different groups that we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Just in the last 2 to 3 years, COVID has helped us spring forward, I think, to change some of the more traditional methods we were using. Not that they were bad, it was just sometimes they're a little more costly. They're not necessarily as quick when we think about our newsletters. So we still have a good number of people that want to get that newsletter that they can hold in their hand, mm-hmm. and they like to read it. So we have those methods. I think the texting and the podcast, the Zoom has really exploded because of COVID. And it's actually been interesting that people before COVID who probably would have said, no, I'm not going to jump into that at all, I'm not interested, actually now are believers. And we have producers, as you were telling the story before, they want to be in the cab of their truck or the cab of their equipment listening to a podcast. Mm-hmm. And that's very different than they would have maybe pre-COVID. So when we talk about the Generation Z, which is the generation who is not just digital natives, they're just everything on their phone. You know, it's digital everything. I think we still have a lot to learn from them because they're just so used to finding everything they need right there on their phone when they need it in real time. And then I've got grandchildren, 6, 3, and 4, and I'm watching them, and their generation is going to be so totally different. My granddaughter goes to their TV and says, Google, find this, or Google, tell me that. So how are we going to handle that one, Dave?
I'm not doing too good in all of that, just so you know.
So we've got to always be prepared and be ready for that next generation's needs. But COVID helped us. I can really say that.
Shameless plug for the podcast. You can ask Alexa to find Kentucky Ag Matters.
See?
In our demographics, it actually shows how folks access our information via phone, via computer, and one is like internet-based information service. And when I looked that up, that's what that is.
Really?
Asking Alexa. So.
Wow, I didn't even think about that, or I'd already been that a long time ago.
So you all are all ready for this next generation.
Something like that.
He
is.
I'm something like that.
But, you know, we've always prided ourselves in meeting the people where they are, where they need it. And in Extension, we've been doing that as long as Extension has been. Referring back to Dr. Capiluto's story, it started with that FCS agent on horseback working back into the mountains to meet her clientele. And, of course, with the recent floods, folks had to do that again because roads were not accessible. I look at this podcast. I look at our newsletters. I look at our in-person meetings, all as the different ways and different means that we use to meet our people where they are. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, and a challenge for Dr. Stevenson and those folks is we're starting to hire people that are Generation Z or whatever they are. I'm not up on all that, but, you know, and they communicate in a completely different way too. And they're being thrust into an environment that maybe everybody doesn't want their stuff on their phone. So they've got some things to learn. And that to me is a challenge for the folks at the university to figure out how to help those kids,
right?
You know, transition into that role and being able to touch all audiences.
It's a good point because the onboarding of new agents is very different than it was when we all started, and we're constantly trying to figure out what's needed. And honestly, that's one thing that probably we haven't thought about, David.
There you go.
Well, there you go. You know, I'll say
my contribution for the day.
I will say this, though, David, and if you put it into this context, we, you and I specifically, and Vicki, have had to change the way we do things to meet our new clientele, the way that they want to be met. We're doing that this way, digitally, where they can access our information on their phones. So really, it's the same paradigm, if you will,
just kind of reversed.
In opposite.
Absolutely.
So. Well, I think one of the other things that Extension is always a part of is when these disasters happen. And unfortunately, Kentucky has had its fair share of disasters in the last 12 months. And, you know, and being the first one was on December the 10th when the tornadoes ripped through West Kentucky and part of Central Kentucky or toward Central Kentucky. And I think that Extension really came together in our, and not just Extension, a lot of organizations. So, Dr. Stevenson, why don't you just talk about that on how Extension has been able to work through and be a help and a resource for the disasters this past year.
Right. And if we think even beyond that, we had ice storms and then we had another flood. It's just the tornado and the recent Eastern Kentucky flooding impacted so many people, so many counties. It was just so widespread. But when we look at the disaster kind of preparedness and disaster response over the last 2 years that Extension agents have had to deal with in their communities, we've had something every 7 months. And as we talk to our Extension partners across the nation, it's about a 7 to 8 month window of time for different type of emergencies. So all of us are talking about how do we get prepared for that, because before we were just every time an emergency came we'd respond and then we'd go back to normal life. And so what we've decided is learning from the two huge disasters and being more responsive. So the big lessons that we took away from the tornado compared to how we responded with the flood is making sure that we had people that could come in and backstop those Extension agents after about 10 days and give the Extension agents a break, because our agents are the frontline people and they're getting calls. And I could almost say 24/7. Mm-hmm. The office is bombarded because that's the place in the community that is so well known for every answer and where to go. And when, especially when we saw the tornadoes in Mayfield and their government structure was gone, the buildings were gone, you know, where do we even go to sign up for this, or where do we go for this help? They were turning to the Extension office. So we were trying to make sure that our people were cared for while they were caring for their people in their community. And then the other thing that Extension agents and staff did so well in both situations was they assessed what needed to be done at the moment. And it was very different. You know, the tornado, it was destruction. So it was really focusing on cleanup and getting people back into places to live and working with emergency first responders in many different ways. In the floods, it was different in two or three ways. And one of them was that it affected the generations across families. In the tornado, people could go live with other people, and because it didn't necessarily affect the house right beside them or their family 2 miles down the road. Yep. In the Eastern Kentucky flood, it took out families.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah. So the housing situation was a real issue. You know, we were trying to help people really quickly understand what they need to do with anything that had been touched by floodwaters. And then the second thing that we saw that was different with the flooding is the environmental health issues, because those floodwaters had everything in them. Mm. So our ag agents were really working with producers to understand, you know, right now, whatever was in your fields, whatever was in your gardens, you cannot use. You just cannot. We've got to wait. So the needs were much the same, hay and fencing, et cetera, but the long-term impacts were a little different in eastern Kentucky. So we're continuing to think about how do we help short-term and long-term in these responses. Mm-hmm.
It seemed like to me, and of course Jay went over there, and he was texting us when he was over there what he had witnessed. And, you know, from an infrastructure standpoint, like the water lines, and of course the only place that you could put a water line was in the ditch.
Exactly.
And a lot of those were washed out, and all the water line was wadded up against a tree in the woods. And, you know, so to me the flooding was a more of an infrastructure thing than, say, the tornadoes from the mass destruction standpoint.
Absolutely. You know, when we think about the tornadoes, it was just that. It was situational. Even though it was a very large area and a very long path, it was very situational and very precise. I've said several times it's hard to imagine something that could be so destructive at the same time be so precise. But people could go 3 miles down the road to a state park. And there were infrastructure damages. There was telephone lines down, but it was in a specific area. It's a path. And David said it just like I said it at the time. In East Kentucky, it was so much more than just people's houses. It was their schools. It was their place of work. It was their church. They had no refuge because everything was impacted equally. They couldn't even take a shower at night. Even if their home was standing, because those water lines were gone, they had no utilities to heat hot water with. And that speaks to the other flood-related issues that you were mentioning with bacterial problems and other issues like that. So it's, while it affects Kentuckians and we're all Kentuckians, it was very, very different. Much larger, in a smaller area, much larger impact overall when it comes to the number of lives affected.
And the people that were coming in to help was different too. And people that were coming in, and maybe electrical companies and things like that, you know, the road departments that were sending folks, there was nowhere for them to stay either. So they're going in there to work, but they're traveling 2 hours back to, you know, to stay at a hotel for the night because that was as close as it was.
To Lexington in many of them's cases.
Yeah, and then driving 2 hours back every day. And so that was something also different from the tornado that, you know, it was just getting the resources and the help there. There was nowhere for them to stay, you know, which limited the time they were there work.
And the other piece was just the way the floods hit in those different areas. People couldn't get in or out. Mm-hmm. So our extension agents worked with the first responders to go to where the people were. Sometimes those folks had to walk 45 minutes to get to a point where they could get supplies. And our agents were going and meeting them there. Like you said, mm-hmm. sometimes horseback was the only way mm-hmm. they could get to people. We helped with vaccinations because, again, the environmental health piece was so critical, making sure that they had tetanus shots. And our agents went with the nurses to take them back into the different hollows to make sure that those that couldn't get out actually had that mm-hmm. opportunity to do that. And I think we one day were able to get 250 tetanus shots in arms. You know,
wow.
That's huge to be able to support the nurses because their agents are the credible, known, respected people in the community. Mm-hmm. So when they were there saying, you know, you might want to make sure you get this just to make sure you're safe because of the floodwaters, then people were more apt to say, yeah, I better do that.
Mm-hmm. I know the day the rain started, the first day of flooding, when it was spread out over really a 3-day issue. That night, I started texting friends of mine in that area, some with extension, some, you know, long family friends. And a lot I could get a hold of pretty immediately. A lot of them I couldn't get a hold of. And, you know, Once the power's down, they can't charge cell phones. They're only going to last for so long anyway. And the cell phone service in those areas, much like some of ours, is spotty to begin with. I finally got a hold of my good friend, Charlie May, there in Hazard, and just via text, I said, tell me what you need. And he responded back with the most familiar words that hit home with me from the tornado. He said, I don't know what we need. Y'all remember me saying that? Yeah. I didn't know. I don't know
early
what we
need.
Early
that Saturday morning. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it takes a while to really get that assessment. But before we can even get to that point where we're figuring out what we need, we have to start helping people with their immediate needs. And so much of that is just emergency situation, life-saving situations. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, if we could do education with people from the outside coming in, and I say this for anywhere that has a natural disaster, sometimes that impact area needs a week mm-hmm. before you inundate it with help. In our case, in Western Kentucky, in Dawson Springs specifically, we had so many people missing lives. You know, most were accounted for eventually, but we had so many people that we could not take account for mm-hmm. that it was still considered an emerging situation. And with that, you just can't have a lot of extra people walking around. And it's really hard for people to understand when they want to help, when they want to be there and be a part. I feel like as much as there is education on our part to do in disaster preparedness, I think we have just as much education available for us to perform in education response, whether it's just for our people that may want to go elsewhere. So, and think about that bringing back a lot of memories, but it sure did.
Yeah.
Well, I think our extension agents talk about whether it was the tornado or this flood, that they're the ones who are inundated with, we want to help you. And it's not just within the state. It's nationally mm-hmm. people are calling saying, what can we do? We want to do something now. And it's that feeling of, how can I help at this moment when we really need to help them understand. Sometimes it's just sending money to the in strategic places mm-hmm. as well as working with those who are working at a higher level. I mean, our relationship with KDA, Kentucky Department of Agriculture mm-hmm. and Farm Bureau was critical in both the tornado and the flood relief because they were able to help us at a higher level manage the donations and mm-hmm. Get them where they need to go.
We had a chance to record a podcast with Eddie Melton. Great. And at the very end of it, I thanked him for that relationship mm-hmm. with Farm Bureau, and I thanked him for their response. Being in Hopkins County, I saw it firsthand. I got to be a part of it firsthand. Of course, he's one of Vicky's producers, and I can't thank these two people enough for the help and the support that they gave me. But certainly Farm Bureau, and I would be hesitant to start naming names and organizations that helped because I know I'd leave some out. But those two, especially when it came to agricultural-related donations, mm-hmm. Farm Bureau and the Kentucky Department of Ag were there early and often with their help.
You know, Vicki and I got to help Jay some, mm-hmm. and in my first experience around that big of a disaster. And we went over there one day and handed out feed and dog food and cat food and that type thing. And then another day I went with Jay and we got some fencing from a local farm store there and hauled it back to the warehouse he was storing it at and then, you know, was handing out supplies from there. So my first experience with anything like that, and, you know, you just didn't know what to do, and you just hear these with some folks there from Muhlenberg County that the young man had lost everything. And, you know, just a heart-wrenching story of lost some family members, and, mm-hmm. and he was telling me about it while we were waiting to load the fence and stuff. And I told Jay, and I got in a truck, and I said, I just can't fathom what they've been through, you know, and it was pretty tough just to hear it, you know, not even to be a part of it, but just to hear it. So, you know, definitely it'll get at you a little bit, you know, and it takes a little bit to get at me, but that'll do it just about every time.
And, you know, I'll – I'll put a shameless plug in for the ag community, because you don't have to go and ask the ag community for help. They're going to come to you. And, you know, that Saturday morning when the light, when the sun come up and you could really see, as far as the tornado, the damage, and the word started getting out, you know, immediately we all had people in our counties and farmers saying, hey,
what
I've
can
got,
I do?
Yeah, I've got this equipment, I got this equipment, I've got, you know, this, what can I do? I can deliver it. All I need to know is where you give me an address and I'm there.
And it goes back to what Jay was talking about. You know, we need a day or two. You need a day or two to assess what you need and where you need it. And you know, and my compliments to those folks that have gone through that and with the flood, those extension agents. I know Charles May, Shad Baker, those folks over in that area.
Chad Conway.
Yeah.
You know, did a
fantastic job.
Chad was one of those that I couldn't get a hold of, that I was texting and letting others know I can't get a hold of Chad.
Yeah.
He's been a friend for a lot of years. I'm trying to get a hold of Chad, and eventually I got a text from him. Somebody told him, and he got back in touch with me. But it's those folks, and I've got family originally from Letcher County, where my grandmother's people were from. When we had the tornado, so many of my friends in extension came from Eastern Kentucky directly to Dawson Springs, because that's where I was. So I've had to return the favor. You know, that's just what you do. It was heart-wrenching, to say the least, to be in any of those places. It was the same for me in Eastern Kentucky as it was in Dawson Springs. I saw people that needed help that you couldn't necessarily help immediately. The first morning that I waded off into Dawson Springs to see what I could do, I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know a lot of people. I knew a few, but I did know I'd need a chainsaw and a bunch of chains. And that's what I took, and that's what I did the first couple of days, was just open up roads.
When we had the tornado in Morgan County 10 years ago, the extension agents lost the office, and the ag agent there shares that she'll never forget the day that a specialist just showed up with a chainsaw. Mm-hmm. And she said she didn't know she needed it until they showed up with it. And it was like just this gift. So it's those little gifts that we can give as an extension family to our community and to our colleagues.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I think that leads us into our timely tip. We always tried to end our podcast with a timely tip each time, and our timely tip today is to get involved with your local extension service and to help improve your community that you live in, because that's what we're about. We are community driven, and if you're not already involved, then get involved, and I'll even say, you know, challenge you to help us not be the best kept secret, because we don't want to be a secret. You know, so those folks that don't know about us, you know, help us spread the word, because we are there to help improve the lives of the people that we serve.
Sure. You know, for those who want to get involved, and we encourage everybody to, there are a lot of avenues for them to do so. It may be as a leader. It may be as a volunteer. It may be as a 4-H leader, or just transportation, trying to get somewhere. It may be through donations. It may be as a host site for a field day. There are a lot of ways to get involved and be a part of that extension community, for sure.
So that's exactly right.
That's a good way to wind this up, Vicki. Dr. Stevenson, we appreciate
you
so much for being here, and we thank our host for this week's information and our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.